This episode of Serialistly is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians, these are all things that people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Hey, true crime besties. Welcome back to an all-new episode of Serialistly. Hey everybody, welcome back to an all new episode of Serialistly with me, Annie Elise, where we are talking all things true crime. Now buckle up, because what we are talking about today is a wild one, and it is one that I first covered on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. I covered it on the Thursday episode, or maybe it was a bonus episode, I can't remember. But as a reminder, if you're watching the YouTube version of this, I do release an additional episode every single week that is exclusive to the podcast that does not get cross-posted on YouTube, and that's where this initial case was discussed. So, but I still am getting so many requests from you guys to cover it. There's more updates that have been coming out. I mean, it really is something that just kind of makes your brain spin. So here I am talking about it on one of our main episodes. It will be cross-posted to YouTube as well, but we've got a lot to talk about. So it is the death, if you haven't guessed by now, of Micah Miller out of North Carolina. There has been so much information coming out the last couple of weeks, and I'm sure that there will be even more information coming out in the near future, but I wanted to just jump in here and give you guys a rundown of all of the facts of this case so far. Because when the news of Micah's death came out, details regarding her marriage and the history and the backstory, the details were released, and many people believed that Micah had been murdered. However, we now know that police have officially ruled her death as self-inflicted. It was a gunshot wound to the head. But there still is an argument out there that, no, this wasn't suicide at all. This was involuntary manslaughter. She was driven to do this because of the abuse, the anguish, the manipulation, all at the hands of her husband. Now, I will say, this case isn't the type of case we traditionally cover on this channel. We usually cover murders, big cases like that, actual ones that where we know that there has been some sort of crime. However, Micah's story is important to talk about for a multitude of reasons. Her situation really does highlight the reality of domestic violence. It highlights the dangers in certain relationships, the mental toll that it can take on these people, and how it can truly lead to devastating outcomes. I also, not for nothing, think that it's really important that we talk about all of these details, because what if, not to like cast blame on her husband for saying that he's the root cause of her death, but if all of these abuse allegations are true, he's definitely not a great guy, but I think it's important to highlight all of this because if there is a chance that her death could be ruled as involuntary manslaughter and somebody else can be held accountable, we should be talking about why people think that might be the case. And some of the updates, guys, like I will say this, the FBI is now apparently investigating this. There is the possibility that somebody else may be held accountable. There's more information coming out that shows an even more peppered and checkered past of her husband than we ever knew. And it looks really, really bad. So today we're going to go over all of the facts, everything that we know so far, as well as some of the theories that people, including Micah's own family, have on this situation, and we're going to get right into it. But before we go into all of the updates, I do want to give a little bit of a backstory on what the situation was, so that if you're a brand new listener and you've never heard about this situation in this case before, you have the full total comprehensive story. So if you are familiar with this case, and if you've listened to my previous episode, you might be hearing a little bit of the same information twice, but I really just want to tell the entire story as a whole from start to finish. So bear with me. So on April 27th, 2024, police were called to Lumber River State Park in North Carolina. There, they found Micah Miller's body. Now, Micah was only 30 years old at the time of her death. And Micah was married to Pastor John Paul Miller. He was a pastor with the Solid Rock Church in Market Common, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina.
So following her death, multiple memorial services were held in Myrtle Beach to honor Micah, who friends and family say was just an extremely involved member at Solid Rock Church, where she sang and where her husband was the pastor. One man said, quote, "She was just the nicest person you ever talked to. She was very uplifting, very supportive, always helping. She was just so nice." Also, a woman said that Micah baptized her daughter and also played an active role in the church's youth program. This episode of Serialistly is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians, these are all things that people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
I earned my degree online at Arizona State University. I chose to get my degree at ASU because I knew that I'd get a quality education, they were recognized for excellence, and that I would be prepared for the workforce upon graduating. To be associated with ASU, both as a student and alum, it makes me extremely proud, and having experienced the program, I know now that I'm set up for success. Learn more at asuonline.asu.edu.
So as police quietly began an investigation into Micah's death, the news of her death initially shocked everyone, but not in the way that you might be thinking. See, nobody knew that she had died until her husband, Pastor John Paul Miller, gave a very bizarre sermon to his congregation.
"We're not going to do an altar call today. Instead, I'm going to have you stand up and I'm going to make an announcement. And after the announcement, I'm going to ask that you leave church quietly and don't talk about the announcement here in the building, please, if you can, so y'all can stand to your feet. Before I make the announcement, I also want to say that my request to you is that you will continue to come to church and serve and give for the next, little bit, because I'm taking a little bit of a break, and I don't want to have to worry about the church. My break may be a few days, a few weeks, I don't know. I got a call late last night. My wife has passed away. And yeah, it was self-induced, and it was up in North Carolina. And we're going to have a funeral for her next Sunday here at 3 p.m. And so it's all I can, I'm just kind of going on adrenaline right now. So y'all pray for me and my kids and everybody. And y'all knew that she wasn't well mentally, and that she needed her medicine that was hard to get to her."
Now, this clip was posted across social media platforms and instantly went viral, guys, because not only is the statement shocking in general, yes, but it was also kind of said in such a crass manner from her husband, who is a pastor, of all people. And on top of all of that, the fact that he literally started out by saying that everybody needed to leave quietly after he was finished with his statement, I mean, the whole thing was just strange at best, and in my opinion, almost pathological at worst, and it kind of just left everybody just feeling like something wasn't quite right here. But then, as quickly as John Paul's announcement of Micah's death went viral, all sorts of different information began coming out, which made this entire situation just all the more puzzling. Many people felt like there was definitely way more to the story than John Paul was letting on, and Micah's family echoed these same sentiments. So let's talk through all of that. So Micah originally filed for divorce in October of 2023. In this document, Micah claimed that JP cheated on her very often, that he treated her horribly. Anytime that Micah tried to push back against JP's behavior, he would apparently threaten her with things like locking her out of the home, telling the church congregation about her issues, which, P.S., he had already done in the past, and he would also throw her stuff in the yard. Now, during this time, Micah was staying with her sister. Micah's sister said that during this time, JP also sent her very threatening messages. He would say bizarre things, such as he was going to stay outside of her house with a gun until Micah came home to him. So Micah's sister ended up calling 911 during this incident.
911, what's the address of your emergency?
I need to report a non-emergency at this point.
Okay, what's going on?
My sister came here today to visit because her and her husband were having issues. She came from Myrtle. She told him she'll be home on Tuesday. And he is texting me at this point saying, "I'll be at your house at 12:55. I'm armed and ready, and I will keep you up all night. I'm going to get her back." and I said, you're not welcome at my house. There are no trespassing signs up. You cannot threaten weapons. He has 6 guns that he just purchased recently, and he's saying, I'm armed and ready. I'm coming to get her.
Micah eventually went home with JP, and the case was dismissed in February of 2024. Back on March 11th, 2024, so a little over a month before she died, Micah's tires were completely slashed around 1:30 a.m. at Springmaid Pier. She claimed that this was also the second time that a razor had deflated her tire within that week. When she took her car in to get her tires fixed at the dealership, a mechanic actually ended up letting her know that not only were her tires slashed, but there was also a tracking device on her car. So Micah reported this tire slashing to the police. Then, later on, at around 11:30 a.m., she called the police again. According to the police report, Micah reported, quote, a man who she has been avoiding came up to her at a gas station. The suspect pulled up beside her and tried to speak with her. She told him to go away, and he sped off before she could record this encounter. He also has been calling and texting her from a private number, despite the fact that she has blocked his number. The report also stated that Micah noticed, quote, strange activity, and believed that people were following or watching her. She then told police that she feared for her life, and that she tried to get a restraining order against this suspect, who was not named in the police reports because no charges ever came from this complaint. So, you can be the judge of who the suspect is in this report. Many people, of course, believe that it was her husband, that she had been trying to get away from him, that maybe he was following her, or he put this tracking device on her, then she finally files for divorce, all of these things, right? However, a lot of other people are saying that no, this is actually a component of mental health struggles. She was hyper-paranoid. She thought somebody was following her. So in another red flag, in an affidavit, her sister, Sierra Francis, asked the court to be the special administrator of Micah's estate. And in this affidavit, she says, quote, I know my sister has expressed the abuse and violence against her by her husband to others, including family members and members of the church congregation. Micah told me that there were people following her, keeping track of where she went. She thought that Mr. Miller hired people to follow her. Mr. Miller later confirmed this during a sermon which I watched. Micah confided in me that Mr. Miller was moving assets that were in his name, such as his vehicle, also changing the deed to their house, to their church, transferring interest in Crocodile Rocks to one of his sons, and in February 2024, Mr. Miller removed my sister's personal items from their home that they shared while she was admitted to a mental health facility, and then he left them at an apartment of a woman named Diana. My sister was not aware that her personal possessions had been removed from her residence until she was released from the hospital. Prior to her admission to the mental health facility, Micah was gathering and sorting the evidence that she had to bring to an attorney for filing for divorce, so that it would support her claims against Mr. Miller as to his abuse, his character, his paramours, and associates that he, quote, paid off or blackmailed. While at the facility, those documents, emails, files, etc., were all removed from her phone, personal laptop, vehicle, and purse, and they were never recovered. Further, Micah was unable to access her iCloud account, her email, or her Facebook profile. Mr. Miller continued using at least one of Micah's accounts, causing any recipient to believe that it was Micah's communications. Micah even talked about what she wanted her life to be like following her divorce from Mr. Miller. Having traveled for a church mission this past fall from October 15th through October 27th, 2023, Micah was intending to participate in additional missions, even to live part-time in Kenya. Micah recently shipped some of her personal items to Kenya in preparation of her stay there. My sister was hopeful for her future after filing for divorce from John Paul. My sister also expressed to me that she was fearful that she would not make it to the divorce and that her life would be taken from her. It is my belief, based on the conversations with my sister, that she told multiple people, including other family members. Micah stated to me on many occasions, quote, if I end up with a bullet in my head, it was not by me. It was JP. Now, coincidentally, this was the same time that Micah was admitted to that hospital. An affidavit has indicated that Micah was hospitalized because JP said that she wasn't taking her medication properly. He said that it was affecting her mental state. Now, Micah had been taking lithium to treat her mental illness since back in 2017. JP said that Micah hated taking her medication, though, because it made her gain weight, it made her slur her speech. He also said that she was being influenced by her church friends, who said that they could just pray her illness away. So because of this, JP said that Micah was having psychotic breaks, and thus she needed to be hospitalized over it. JP had the power of attorney over Micah's care, so he's the one who hospitalized her in February 2024. But was this payback? Was this truly for her well-being? A lot of people wondered what the truth was. What was the real motive behind this? Now, while she was in the hospital, JP also took her purse and her car keys. Then he went to go find her car, which had been left in a parking lot. And JP said that he did this because he was worried what Micah might do when she left the hospital. See, according to him, she was prone to these manic episodes during this time of the year. She had a history of impulsive spending, and he was really worried that she would try to sell her car to then fund some of her purchases, some of that impulsive spending. JP stated that he was incredibly upset as well because Micah had been having these psychotic episodes. And at one point, he claimed that Micah bought a gun and that he was the one who was scared that she was going to shoot him. He was begging her family and all of her friends to help her, but apparently, according to him, they all refused. However, Micah's family and friends, they tell a very, very different story. They think that JP often exaggerated Micah's illness and that Micah had not stopped taking her medication. She just went from taking two pills to one, which was allowed under her medical regimen. It was allowed that she could reduce the dose if she wanted. So while she was hospitalized, JP was upset that Micah's family just wasn't working with him. And he actually threatened that he would prevent them from seeing her in the hospital if they didn't work with him. During all of this, Micah's father, Michael, asked to see the papers that gave JP power of attorney over Micah's care. And when JP showed him these forms, Michael noticed that they weren't signed and they also weren't notarized, meaning that these were not official documents. And Michael actually thinks that JP faked these forms to somehow convince Micah that he had the right to hospitalize her. Just another example of the mental and the emotional control that he had over her. And things were just getting crazier. We're going to get into all of that, guys, but first, we are going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors of today's episode, and thank you for understanding that sponsors are essential in keeping this podcast absolutely free for you, and they're hooking you up with amazing deals, so I greatly appreciate it. This episode of Serialistly is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians, these are all things that people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds, because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
All right, so where was I? Micah filed for separation from John Paul just 12 days before her death. And according to her obituary, they got married back in 2017 after first meeting back in 2009. It's also been alleged that she was 15 years old when they first met, but just to give you a little bit more context behind the timeline of how long they had known each other. She had filed three different, quote, separate support and maintenance requests. This is since last year. And the very last one was filed in mid-April of 2024. Again, and she was just found dead on the 27th. Now, separate support and maintenance allows for one spouse to receive court-ordered support from another spouse without officially divorcing. Now, even though Micah officially filed for divorce in April, she and John Paul have been separated for months. It's been reported that during this time, John Paul has had a girlfriend. Now, this alleged girlfriend's husband died 3 years ago from what was ruled as a drowning accident. And in a weird twist of fate, or serendipitous moment, whatever you decide, that same report indicated that John Paul conducted the husband's funeral. And multiple other people have come forward with allegations about JP's inappropriate behavior. Apparently, his aggressive and erratic behavior started way before his relationship with Micah. He had multiple traffic violations, and he also had a conviction for assault and battery. In 1999, he hit a woman with his truck, twice. Then he dragged her down the road.
Then, disturbingly, it gets even worse. In 2017, an affidavit says that JP's ex-wife stated that JP admitted to having sex with church members who were younger than 16 years old. He also admitted to being addicted to sex workers, and apparently he also was having an affair with Micah in 2015 while she was still the family's babysitter. Apparently, JP had confessed all of this to the different church members as well. But instead of removing him from the church, they just said, no, you just need counseling. However, JP refused the counseling, which then angered many of the members of the church congregation, and that caused them to leave the church entirely. So John Paul was previously married and had 5 children before marrying Micah. According to friends and family and even church congregation members, John Paul actually met Micah when she was 14 or 15 years old in that youth group, as I previously mentioned. Now, it's been reported that at the time, he was actually the leader of that youth group, and that this was during his previous marriage. So some people believe that he allegedly groomed her before then marrying her later on when she was legally an adult. And to level set the age difference, John is 44 years old now, and Micah is 30 years old, so back then he would have been around 28 years old when she was 14 or 15 years old. Certainly too old to be dating a 14 or 15 year old. Now, in another unsettling piece of information, one of John Paul's exes posted on Facebook about a similar situation. Again, this is according to a Facebook post, guys, so take it with a grain of salt because I haven't been able to 100% verify the information. But in this post, she reads, and I'm going to read it verbatim for you because she hashtags this post with Justice for Micah. She says, "While posting updates, I'm going to speak out on the Micah Miller case. I am an ex of John Paul Miller. I was 14 years old and he was 19 years old. I was a child at the time, but I didn't see an issue. But at 19, obviously he should have. We dated for a year and I found out that he was dating his first wife, Allie, while we were together, all unbeknownst to her. She later found out and he lied about it, as he continued to do, about the multitude of infidelities the remainder of their marriage. This has been hard to watch and keep quiet about, but I feel it's time to be transparent about it. I attended and graduated from Grandstand Academy, later renamed Cathedral Hall Academy, the church and school his father founded and was headmaster of, which later became Solid Rock. I dated John Paul and dealt with a small amount of his abuse comparatively. JP also contacted me inappropriately after Allie finally left him due to infidelity. This was around 2016. He was not remorseful of his actions to her with others, was upset over the amount of people that left the church that hurt him financially, and was quickly shut down on my end. What I did witness, with myself and my siblings as members in the church as teenagers, is the overall abuse from JP and his father to others. I also visited many state parks with JP, visiting his dad because he loved state parks to, quote, reconnect with God. Myrtle Beach State Park is also where his dad was arrested for soliciting gay sex. You can look that up publicly. The fact that Micah was found in a state park only brings me back to this family. I feel I have been a coward in not speaking out and dealing with this privately with my family, but I want to say that we believe that this was Micah's last and oh-so-important purpose in stopping this man from continuing to hurt others and to stop him as a representative of our Lord and Savior. I am a Christian, and I love the Lord so much, and I want to say that what John Paul Miller and his dad represent is not of God. It is not a representation of Jesus Christ. God is good and pure and kind, and he would never want a man to treat his wife the way that JP treated Micah. Please don't let this evil man turn you away from the church." And then it's hashtagged Justice for Micah.
Was there did he have an affair with Micah and leave his wife and children to be with her? And if that's the case, how old was she when he did that?
So I remember a specific conversation that I'd had with him when that was brought up, and because I'd heard about that, like there were rumors, you know, going around that their relationship even started in infidelity and things like that. And in my conversation with him, he did basically confirm that he did not get into her age. What he said to me point blank was that she was in my youth group. We became friends. Over time, it became kind of something more. And that was probably the gist of it as far as I can remember now. I mean, it's been years ago, but it was a little concerning. And there were other members of the church.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there were other members.
That's very concerning, right?
Oh, very, yes. And there were other members of the church, though, that when I asked about it, it was just kind of, it's something that kind of just everybody knew and accepted.
It's just all unnerving. It's all unsettling. A friend that spoke to Micah the night before she died also posted on Facebook and said the following. I will not sit here and pretend that I know exactly what happened on Saturday, but I know a lot. I am well aware in the past that Micah has had mental health issues and I witnessed her struggle firsthand. But I also know that in the last few months, this has never been used as a weapon to control her. The Micah I saw at the beginning of her mental health journey was not the Micah I witnessed in the last month. The Micah I was seeing was a grown woman trying to break the chains of an abusive marriage. When I talked to Micah last, she was making plans, moving forward, and trusting God. Her faith was her shield. She had reconnected with people that she had been isolated from, myself included. She was sorting out her new normal, and God was putting the right people around her. When we had our first meeting in years, we sat at lunch and talked until dinner time, for 5 hours. We had been in regular communication since that day. I was part of Micah's church for years. We did life together during that season. Leaving that church was one of the hardest things Brian and I ever did. We loved the people in that church, but God had made it clear that we needed to go because it was a toxic environment. We endured relentless attacks from the pastor. It was unlike anything we had ever experienced. In ministry, God calls us where he needs us, and instead of supporting and loving us, our entire family came under attack. There were attempts to sabotage us in our new church home, calls made to employers, dropping in at my place of business in the middle of my workday when I refused to answer calls, and the calls were more than I can count. Emails that were rants in writing, it was a nightmare for close to a month. So Micah wasn't just leaving a church, she was leaving her marriage, she was done. She hired a lawyer, she moved out, she was getting a divorce, and she was left with nothing but her faith, her family, and a small circle of friends. Was it hard? Yes. She had her tires cut multiple times, found multiple trackers on her car, couch hopped in fear of being found, and was hospitalized by her husband when it was completely unnecessary. She confided to me that she felt like an orphan and feared that no church would want her because of him. What she didn't know is that a large portion of us who had experienced the wrath of that existing church were waiting for her with open arms. I talked to her multiple times in her final week here on earth. She was making plans to get her hair cut, getting help with her car payment because she was a little short after paying her divorce lawyer, and planning to meet us for the second service at church on Sunday. My final text with her on Friday at 9:19 p.m. was a woman making plans to live. What happened between Friday night and Saturday? This episode of Serialistly is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians, these are all things that people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
I was so overwhelmed seeing two certain people on the news last night trying to minimize Micah by painting her mentally ill and crying like they were currently present in her life. So guys, that post was obviously loaded for a multitude of reasons. Not only was she saying that she was texting with her up until she was then found dead, and that Micah had been making all of these plans to live and to live a more happy life, but she's also saying that she had witnessed abuse firsthand from the church, the wrath of the church, as she calls it, the wrath of JP, John Paul, the pastor. And guys, there are so many stories out there about JP's awful behavior. Few of them have been confirmed. However, we do know that he has a history of reactive behavior against Micah. Anytime that she tried to stand up for herself or do something for herself, JP retaliated. In an old email to Micah, And JP even stated that he doesn't forgive when people hurt him. And instead, he just hurts them back. He attacks people to cause them pain. And this was further corroborated by the fact that JP tried to seek revenge on Mica when she filed for divorce again in April of 2024. Because after she filed, scumbag JP actually posted a public nude photo of Mica on his social media. He eventually took it down, and then he sent her an email which read, "I'm sorry for putting a picture of you on the internet. It was for less than 1 hour and immediately taken down. I was hurt that you were telling everyone horrible intimate details of my past sin, and I just wanted to try and hurt you. Please forgive me. It was evil of me to do that." Which, it doesn't matter if it was up for 1 minute, 1 second, 1 hour. You are putting revenge porn on the internet of your wife. It is absolutely despicable. So Mica then sent an affidavit to her attorney, and in this affidavit it said, "Since the day that we became husband and wife, I have been abused in every way that I can think of. Emotionally, sexually, spiritually, financially, and physically. He has harassed me physically and electronically with letters, phone calls, emails, and texts, hacking my emails, hacking my personal Facebook, and impersonating me. Using my stolen phone to send texts and emails out to church members pretending to be me. Texting friends and family, saying that I'm sleeping with teenagers from our church, also showing up in person at places around town, to then having installed 3 different tracking devices on my vehicle." I mean, very serious allegations, very scary allegations. And what makes this even more haunting, guys, if you can believe it, is that Mica sent this 9 days before her death. So JP has since released a statement to News Nation, specifically addressing the tracking device allegation, all of that. And he says, "I hired a PI to put trackers on her car to know if she was going to the gun store, because she kept trying to get a gun for the past few months. I never once in my life hurt her in any way. Ever." But people, for obvious reasons, still aren't really believing him. At all. I mean, maybe he didn't pull the trigger, yes, but his abusive behavior clearly was putting Mica through hell. She was distraught. Her whole family is distraught over it. And on top of all of that, there was a police report that was filed just 2 days after Micah's tires were slashed. And in this police report, it's accusing her of stealing almost $1,200 from the church's donations. These donations were meant for their missionary efforts in Africa. This report was filed by somebody at the church, and Mica, while she was never named in the report, was confirmed to be the offender, and JP was listed as the other party, meaning he's the one that filed this report on her. The documents had alleged that she had done these transfers via Zelle and also via the Cash App, and that she had also taken out cash donations and put them into her personal account. However, on April 8th, the investigation was closed because there was no probable cause showing that she had actually done this, and the city attorney even said that this was a civil matter between two parties. So to me, at least, it seems like more likely like he was just kind of on this controlling rampage, that after he slashed her tires, after she noticed the tracking device, she realized she was in some serious trouble, so she was trying to gather some money to then be able to escape his grasp, and he didn't like that. He didn't like that he was losing control. I also think that it was mainly for control and revenge because, according to documents, she did have access to those funds. It wasn't as though she was stealing it. And that seems to be proven considering that they had a post-nuptial agreement that was drafted in February, which said that Mica was entitled to the African missions, to the Dare to Care mission, and to the bank account at the South State Bank. Now, it doesn't seem like the agreement was actually filed. However, it was drafted and signed. So it makes me wonder, if you had that agreement in place, why would you go to the police accusing her of that? It makes no sense. Unless, of course, again, it was for control and revenge. Another thing that has people up in arms and thinking that there's a lot of red flags and shadiness going on here is that Mica posted videos on Facebook speaking to women in general about situations of abuse. And she also shared advice to those who may be in abusive relationships.
I've had a lot of women that have reached out to me about situations of abuse. And I just want to tell you what a lot of people have told me. Male or female, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what gender you are. Abuse is abuse. And you are the bride of Christ. And my Bible says that he took all the abuse you could think of for you so that you didn't have to live that life of slavery and bondage and pain. So you don't have to stay in a abusive relationship, whether that's sexual, whether that's somebody forcing you to take illegal drugs or alcohol abuse or physical abuse, psychological abuse, making you think that this is all your fault, or you're a bad mom, or you're a bad wife, or you're a bad husband, or you're not giving it your all when you know you are. God hates divorce. But why? According to everybody I've asked and the scriptures that I've found, it's because it hurts people. But does abuse hurt people? How do you think God feels about that?
Now, people close to the couple have started to post statements on Facebook. These statements specifically address his behavior, and one of these posts read, "What I'm about to say is my deep-hearted opinion. However, some stuff will be things that I have personally experienced. I've said it from the beginning, JP doesn't have the guts to unalive anyone. If you truly know him, then you know that his biggest game is stalking, manipulating, and brainwashing. He is the one who will hand you the gun and dare you to do it, or the one to place it on the counter when he knows that they are at their lowest. Just listing examples here. I'm not saying he did or didn't have something to do with it at some level, or that he pushed this sweet soul to the point that she felt like she had no other option. It's heartbreaking, it's nauseating, and I can promise you this, JP is smiling after the ruling. He is thinking that he is at no fault. He is thinking that this will blow over and that he will build his new church and he will have another brainwashed congregation to follow him. He is a narcissist at its finest. Don't stop speaking out. He will make someone's life a living hell until they feel that they can't escape it. I've personally witnessed many situations in the over 30 years that I have known him. I've stood up to him in his lies, and we have had multiple disagreements. I have always said that JP was scared of me because he doesn't know how to handle a woman or man who calls him out on his bullshit, who doesn't fall for his manipulating techniques. He's a weak man with a brilliant ability to manipulate and brainwash." In another post by somebody who used to be close friends with JP, it says, "I believe the saying goes, getting a taste of your own medicine. And I mean that quite literally. You have used and abused for way too long, only to get up on that pulpit and consistently discredit your victims by airing out intentional, degrading, and inappropriate personal information. Doing that allows you to control the narrative. Now we have the death of your wife that you claim only took her life because of mental illness. Fact is, nobody was ever mental until they met you." A close friend of Micah's said that she also had to get multiple different phone numbers in the months leading up to her death because JP just would not leave her alone. In the same statement, the friend said, "You don't have to physically pull the trigger to be responsible for someone's death. You can minimize your own behavior by resting on others' weaknesses." All right, guys, and we are going to take one final break in today's case to hear from the final sponsors of today's episode. This episode of Serialistly is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians, these are all things that people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds, because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Now, many people online and in Facebook groups have put together another timeline of events relating to John Paul's statements at the church. This post comes from somebody named Robbie Harvey on Facebook, and I haven't been able to verify every single thing in this post, so again, please take this information with a grain of salt and do your own research. But it's titled The Micah Miller Timeline of Events. It says, on February 4th, Pastor John Paul preaches a sermon on Korah and Moses and how it's wrong to rise against religious leaders. On February 23rd, Pastor John Paul files for spousal support. February 25th, in another sermon to his congregation, Pastor John Paul says, a mentally ill person doesn't know they're sick. Quote, you have to trust people around you. The thing that's sick is your mind, and your mind is what you need to realize that you're sick. On March 10th, Pastor John Paul preaches a sermon and reveals that he went through 2 years of messages on his wife's phone. He found that 18 people reached out saying to her, quote, if you ever want to talk about your husband, you can talk to me and I'll keep it confidential. Visibly upset, the pastor followed up with, quote, that's a demon talking, end quote. Now, I just got to say, guys, really quick before I continue, this does stick out to me, whether it means something or not in the greater grand scheme of thing, I don't know, but the fact that he's vocalizing publicly that he went through 2 years of messages on his wife's phone, first of all, it's my belief that if you go through your partner's phone history messages, that that is an indicator of some type of like control or abusive behavior emotionally, whatever it may be. I personally don't believe in doing that. But if you're allowing it and you're like, go through my phone, let's go through each other's, to each their own. I just think if you're like secretly going through a phone, that's not a good sign. But also the fact that he then talked about his findings publicly and that he found 18 people had reached out to her saying, hey, if you ever want to talk about your husband, talk to me. I'll keep it confidential. To me, that kind of indicates that there were 18 people at minimum worried enough to where they expressed to her, hey, if there's anything you want to confide in me, it'll be confidential. Is there anything that you want to talk about? So either they recognized that something was wrong, or maybe they recognized something in his behavior. And I think that's pretty telling, not saying that he's a murderer, but like, I think that does shed some light on the dynamic of this marriage. But again, for him to then just say this publicly, but say, that's a demon talking, it's kind of giving entitled. It's kind of giving thinking you're holier than thou. So this was on March 10th. In another piece on this timeline there, because there's a few things from March 10th. And the next thing says, March 10th, Pastor John Paul says to his congregation, quote, one thing I'm going to preach about is getting rich, strong, healthy, and finding a hot wife that loves Jesus. This was while he was wearing his wedding ring. Then, on March 10th, he also tells his congregation that his wife was in the hospital, and as soon as she got out, she left him. He says, quote, she gets out and she just leaves, just completely leaves me, leaves everything, drains the bank account, and just goes. Guess what? While you're talking bad about me out there, I'm building a school in Africa for over 100 kids to be able to be fed. Again, why he's airing all of this dirty laundry publicly, I don't know. I've seen it happen actually in a church local to me too, and it brushed me the wrong way. But also, like, the fact that he's talking about how she leaves this hospital and then leaves him, drains the bank account, yet he's bringing it back to him and how amazing he is, being like, so while you're doing this, I'm building a school in Africa for over 100 kids so they can be fed. It's just like, it's giving, I don't want to say narcissist, but kinda. I don't know. What do you think? So then on March 12th, his request for spousal support was dismissed, but there's no explanation as to why. Then 5 days later, on March 17th, Pastor John Paul tells a story of a pastor whose wife left him for a member of his staff. The pastor had to hire a third-party company to find her. Once he found her, divorce papers were drawn up. When the time came to sign the papers, the pastor couldn't do it though because, quote, the Bible says divorce is wrong, and that if she wanted out, she would have to leave him. So then, that same day on March 17th, in a Facebook post made by Micah's sister, Sierra, she says that she keeps an eye on her phone, quote, for fear of my sister's safety due to others' behaviors toward her. She goes on to mention the sermon from March 17th, and she calls out the congregation of Solid Rock Church. The very next day then, on March 18th, Micah posted a video encouraging others. She says, quote, I'm just making sure my heart doesn't have any unforgiveness, bitterness, resentment, just forgiveness and hope for the future, and peace. But then, on March 22nd, Micah posts another video. In this one, she's suggesting that she was being abused physically and mentally. She also says, quote, God hates divorce, but how does God feel about abuse? She also suggests that her husband forced her to take illegal drugs. Now, what sticks out to me with this, again, just my opinion, is this was just, what, 5 days after his sermon when he's saying that the Bible says divorce is wrong and that if she wanted out, she would have to leave him after he had found her and how the divorce papers were drawn up, all that stuff. So then for 5 days later for her to say, yes, God hates divorce, but how does he feel about abuse? I feel it's just painting a very clear picture of what's
going on in this marriage, at least to me. And again, I just want, I know I've said it before, but I'm going to reiterate, it does not mean he's a murderer, but it does show that there's some sort of manipulation, some sort of level of mental control, mental abuse, at least to me. So this was on March 22nd. Fast forward about 3 weeks to April 16th, Micah files for spousal support. Then about a week later on April 23rd, a hearing notice was sent out for Micah's request for spousal support, and a court date was set for June 5th. But then, just 5 days later, Micah is found dead. On May 6th, 2024, Micah's official cause of death was ruled as a self-inflicted gunshot wound. So then on May 7th, 2024, the 911 call was released, and this call is very heartbreaking and difficult to listen to because in it you can hear Micah ask the dispatcher if they're able to track her phone. After a couple of minutes, the woman asks why, and she says, "Because I'm about to kill myself and I want my family to know where to find me," and then the line goes dead.
Robinson County 911, what's the address of your emergency?
Hi, are you able to trace the location of my phone?
Let me see. You don't know where you're at?
A national park. I have my location on, I think, on my phone. Find my phone is on. I just did my share my location.
Okay, I'm showing... I don't think you are in Robinson County. Are you at the Lumber River State Park?
Yeah, that's where I am.
Tell me what's happened.
I'm about to kill myself, and I just want my family to know where to find me.
Okay, ma'am. Just listen to what I'm saying, okay? Let me make sure I got the exact location where you're at, okay? Just 1 minute.
Shortly after this call was made public, the sheriff's office also made a post on Facebook that was public, and in it, they discussed the 911 call about how it went to the dispatcher's office and if it could be the call could be traced, all of these things, and then they go through the timeline of events after they recovered her body. They said that investigators located a SIG gun case on the passenger seat of the vehicle and a box of ammunition in the center console of the vehicle. They also found a receipt for that SIG handgun from a pawn shop and a receipt from a convenience store. Those receipts were both in the vehicle, and both receipts were dated from the same day of Micah's death, which was April 27th, 2024. During the search of the park for Micah, when they knew that the 911 call had come in, the investigators were approached by an individual who had found a bag near the water edge with an identification belonging to Micah. The individual stated that he had heard somebody crying and a gunshot while he was fishing. Shortly after, a body was located in the water and the victim was identified as Micah Miller. The SIG 9mm handgun was also located in the water at the crime scene during that initial search of the area. Her phone and her other personal belongings were also located, and there was a search of Micah's phone which revealed that she had conducted a Google search for National Parks Near Me, and then the Lumber River State Park location was provided. So the investigators conducted several interviews, and they developed a timeline of events in relation to Micah's death. That morning at 11 a.m., Micah was observed on her Ring camera arriving at her residence in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. About 40 minutes later, at 11:38, she was observed again on her Ring camera leaving her residence. At 12:12 p.m., she was observed on store surveillance walking into a Dick's pawn shop, which is also located in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. A minute later, she's observed at the register, and she initiates the purchase of that gun. Then at 12:34, Micah is observed leaving the pawn shop after purchasing the gun and the ammunition. At 1:06 p.m., her Honda Accord is observed traveling on Highway 501 near 4 Mile Road in South Carolina. Then 20 minutes later at 1:27, it's observed arriving at a grocery and grill located in Mullen, South Carolina. At 1:35 p.m., Micah is observed leaving the store after purchasing a drink and gas. Then at 2:54 p.m., Micah makes that 911 call. So after John Paul's sermon, you know, the one when he announced Micah's mental health issues and said that she died of a suicide, John Paul was released from his duties as a pastor, and a notice was sent out to the members of the church saying that John Paul was, quote, released for a time of healing, counsel, and guidance pursuant to our governing instrument. The Solid Rock Church website has also since been suspended. So while law enforcement officials have, yes, confirmed that Micah took her own life, people are, of course, convinced that JP pushed her to do so. Very recently, footage from the funeral that JP held for Micah has been released, and this funeral was held at Solid Rock Church on May 5th. Micah's family was not invited, but they were having their own ceremony for her at a local beach. But now, in this footage, people can't help but notice that JP was acting a little strange during his eulogy for Micah. Now, we of course can't judge people and how they grieve, but something about JP during his speech just, it felt off. He was shaking, acting erratically, he was talking all over the place. It wasn't a typical eulogy. He would go from complimenting Micah to then almost turning those compliments into insults or things that he didn't like about her. He would say things like, and this is paraphrasing, but Micah loved to travel, but I hated to travel. Micah loved to take pictures, but I hated taking pictures. Micah loved to talk all the time. I didn't. I often had to remind myself to listen to what she was saying. She loved tattoos. I hated them. She wrote poetry, which what kind of woman writes poetry? She loved to do dangerous things like skydiving, but I didn't, because what if I got hurt? She had all these big ideas all the time, but I never took her seriously. I just told her to pray about her ideas for a few days because I knew that she would eventually forget about them. So the only time that he was really even, like, complimenting her was when he was talking about all of the things that she would do for him. For example, he loved comic books, so she would dress up like his favorite comic book character. She'd also make him custom comic books. He said things like she was beautiful to look at, took great care of his kids, gave him great gifts, and did things for him at the church, even when she didn't want to do them. All of the things that he loved about her were things that he directly benefited from. But that wasn't even the weirdest thing. At one point, JP said that he visited the morgue multiple times so that he could see Micah's body. While he was there, he expected her to wake up, and at one point, he says, he actually tried to resurrect her from the dead.
It really hadn't hit me. You know, I've gotten to spend, as Christians, of course, we know she's not here and in heaven, and she's, you know, worshiping and enjoying, and I hadn't even had time to look down here yet. But I got this lay next to her body and spent time with her body about four times this week. And each time, it still didn't hit me. I thought she was going to wake up, you know. I even tried to raise her from the dead one time this week. And that morning, actually, I went to the mall later. She had bought me this dog tag, and the chain broke. So I went to the mall to get it fixed. And I saw a female about 20, 30 feet in front of me, and she was wearing one of Micah's dresses, and she had the same tattoo Micah has on her arm and the exact same hair. And out of just instinct, I screamed, "Micah!" And the girl turned around, and it was one of her sisters. And I thought I raised her from the dead. She's alive, you know.
Then towards the end of his speech, JP was doing this combination of, like, laughing and crying, which is honestly just eerie and very uncomfortable to watch. This episode of Serialistly is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians, these are all things that people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds, because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Imagine being married to that. It was like that in our house all the time. Y'all stand your feet, and Pastor Randall's going to close in prayer.
Now, because so many people are still questioning JP and his weird behavior, his potential involvement, he ended up releasing a statement through his lawyer. The statement says, "Following the untimely death of Micah Miller, unfounded rumors and false accusations began circulating on social media and in various media outlets, suggesting Pastor Miller's involvement in her demise. This created a buzz, causing local and national news media outlets to begin profiting off of these falsehoods on a mammoth proportion. Our client refutes any report that suggests he ever abused his wife. However, Micah's family has also publicly stated that they do not believe JP, not at all. In fact, many members of her family are still not convinced that her death was self-inflicted. On Facebook, her father Michael said that this investigation is not over. He ended up doing an interview with Law and Crime, and he made some really interesting statements. One, when Micah was found dead, there were bruises on her arms and her hands, as well as scratches, which looked like defensive wounds. Two, multiple shell casings were found near Micah's body, even though she only shot herself one time. Three, near the area where Micah's body was found, a tree had a bullet hole in it. Four, her dad knew that she wanted a gun, but he was under the impression that she bought it for her safety. 5. Micah's voice was so slow during her 911 call that it seemed like it wasn't really like her. Something seemed off, and he feels like AI might be involved. 6. Micah had been tracked in the past, so it was possible that she was being tracked that day. 7. They believe that Micah was forced to shoot herself.
Do you have a theory as to what happened? Because authorities are saying, you know, they crossed out his alibi of where he was. Do you have a theory as to what happened? And again, I know this is sensitive, so if you don't want to share it, I understand. But do you have a theory as to what you believe happened to your daughter?
Okay, well, I'll share what we spoke to about with the authority, the sheriff in North Carolina. Also, as far as with his location, we've seen pictures of his truck. It had dark windows. Was it even him in there? Where's pictures of him physically there? We haven't seen those. They have not been produced. If someone else has them, we would like to see them to prove that he was there, because otherwise it could be anybody in that truck. So the theory would be that because she had multiple tracking devices put on her car previously, that she was followed out to the park or forced to go out to the park. And they either follow her out there or she, which is, there's no reason for her to go out there. That's the main point as well. She's never been out there. We don't go up there. It's not a family spot. And she was off the trail enough into a park ranger only area that nobody knows about. And so the theory would be that she... it was either tracked, and then they said, well, we didn't find a tracking device. Well, they could have removed it at the park. When the car was at the park, and then it was collected by the authorities, they didn't check for a tracker, which blew my mind. They said, oh, we have all the evidence and everything. We asked them, was there a tracker on her car? And they said, well, we didn't check. And we were flabbergasted. This happened over and over during that interview. Why didn't you check that? We know that there was 3 or 4 trackers put on her vehicles. Why wouldn't you check to see if she was followed? They said, oh, there's no cameras, but we know she wasn't followed. Her car is just out here. And I said, well, there's no trackers. They said, no tracker. I said, well, they could have removed it after they did the deed. So then Micah's mother, Angelita, she said, pretend this is Micah's hand. And she asked me, grab this hand. And then she pulled it up, you know, and said, it looks like someone squeezed her hand and raised it up and shot. And there are defensive wounds from it and such. Mm. And that's the general idea of our theory, that somebody crushed her hand to hold the gun up to her head while she's fighting. Either them or someone else held her other hand or her other arm back because there's bruising on it from squeezing. And they forced it to look like that was self-inflicted. And a couple of rounds went off during the scuffle. One ejected was live. And then it finally happened the way they would want it to happen. And then dumped her in the water, probably 40 meters away from where the shell casings in the gun was found. The water doesn't flow there. It's a slough. It's still. It just sinks. And it actually flows when it sinks, when it recesses, it goes the other direction from where she was found. So her body, even if it was put in the water right there, would not have flowed the direction where she was found. It would flow the other way. So it would be possible that the incident occurred right there and the shell casings and then the gun was dumped in the water right there. And then she was carried farther 40 meters back into a little bit more secluded area. where she was found.
Micah showed no signs of mental illness before she met JP. JP controlled many aspects of her life since she was just 14 years old.
He had every way to control her, and he was very good at manipulating the situation.
And she thought that he would be doing the right thing. She wanted to trust that Mr. Miller Jr. was actually doing the right thing for them until she got away from him and had more time, when she spent more time with us, to peel off some of those layers and realize what was going on. And then she started becoming herself again and got a job and everything else and was doing fine and was happy-go-lucky self again, excited about the future, and which is something he did not like. Just very terrible.
There are these allegations that he groomed her. What do we mean by that?
He had his sights set on her from a very young age. I would guess probably 14 years old, 14 or 15 when we first came to the church. And he, you know, he made sure that he kept her exactly where he wanted her, to the point of who she married, what job she picked up after she was, you know, 18. He got her married, and then he made her his secretary and his babysitter and his let's go to lunch person, and oh, you're so beautiful.
A lot of people believe these theories, and people have noted that JP's lawyer specializes in AI and could have had a hand in faking her 911 call. Personally, for me, I feel like it is a stretch. I think it's a little too conspiracy, but some people think that you can hear another voice in the 911 call, but that voice is likely not coming from Micah's end of the call.
Of your emergency.
We have been reviewing the details of the Micah Miller investigation and going over the comments that you've left on our last video. Many of you have said that in her 911 call, before she starts speaking, you can hear a male's voice in the background. So we pulled that, isolated the audio, and this is what we found.
Robinson County 911, what's the address of your emergency?
Hi, are you able to trace the location of my phone?
Robinson County 911, what's the address of your emergency?
There's definitely a man's voice that can be heard in the background. Many people believe he's saying Micah Miller's name.
See?
We isolated that portion of the 911 call, and we cleaned up the background noise, enhanced the audio, and this is what we found. We believe it's a person in the background of the 911 operator who says, my folder.
Robinson County 911, what's the address of your emergency?
Hi, are you able to trace the location of my phone?
This is a really sad investigation all the way around, and our hearts go out to Micah Miller and her family. There are a lot of weird details that don't add up, but we don't think that this is one of them. Let us know what you think. We're going to stay on top of this.
And apparently, JP has a boat that he keeps at his lawyer's house, which is where near Micah's body was found. So people think that they could have used that to get away. I mean, you really can go down a rabbit hole learning about JP, his family, his kids, etc. But as I said, these are all theories that don't really have a lot of factual information backing them up. It's just what people are saying. What is more likely is that JP's terrible treatment led to Micah's gradual mental health deterioration, and that eventually it caused her to take her own life. Many people are wondering if JP can be held accountable, and on Tuesday, May 14th, the county sheriff's office released a pretty surprising statement. They say that the county sheriff's office has been in contact with the United States Attorney Office and with the FBI in South Carolina, that they've been in contact since the early stages of the Micah Miller investigation. Based on the information gathered during the investigation and the jurisdiction reasons, the sheriff's office has requested the assistance of both agencies. No other information will be released at this time, though, and anyone with information pertaining to the Miller investigation in South Carolina is asked to contact the Columbia, South Carolina FBI office. And on that same day, the FBI confirmed that they had been consulted about Micah's case. But they're not confirming, denying, or commenting on the investigation. They can't say whether an investigation is underway or not. But in response to this, Micah's family lawyer released a statement which read, "The family is grateful for everything that everyone has done to help find justice for Micah. They are aware that the county sheriff's office released a statement about the FBI being involved. However, the family has no personal knowledge of the nature of any FBI investigation and therefore has no comment. Justice for Micah." So it seems like maybe an investigation is still underway. We don't know. But maybe they're also looking into JP and seeing if he should be held accountable for something. Although the family and attorney didn't have anything to comment about that specifically, we do know that they have been outspoken about other things given the interview that I talked about earlier, and also some things that the attorney has shared. Regina Ward is their attorney, and she said that an investigative report did not identify witnesses who corroborated JP's whereabouts, and also that no autopsy, toxicology analysis, or gunshot residue tests were performed on Micah's body. Regina was also working with Micah prior to her death on her separation, and she had just seen Micah on the 25th, 2 days before she died. In that meeting, just as others have said, Micah was giving no signs of wanting to end her life. Instead, she was working very hard toward living a life without JP. She never mentioned being suicidal, she never mentioned going to North Carolina, she never mentioned anything that would seem off in the slightest. Regina said that she is concerned that the scene was investigated for the purposes of looking for evidence to support a finding of suicide, as opposed to investigating the scene. So, obviously, this case is rapidly developing. I mean, there is new information coming out constantly, and her family does not want people to stop talking about this. They encourage everybody to use the hashtag JusticeForMicah, and they want more eyes on this. They want answers. They want to figure out what happened and is somebody else truly responsible? Again, not that they pulled the trigger, but did they drive her to this? And I also think it's interesting that with the autopsy, which I would imagine was JP's doing to say, don't test for gunshot residue, don't do a tox report, don't do anything like this. Remember when Micah had posted that video saying, okay, I know divorce is bad and people say divorce is bad, but what does God think about husbands who drug their wives? And she was starting to kind of indicate that that might be happening. One of the things I said in my last episode was like, what is the tox report going to say? Was she maybe heavily influenced under something that he had been feeding her under the table, which isn't a conspiracy? I mean, we have seen that in so many different marital cases, right? But the fact that there was no tox analysis, there was no gunshot residue test, I don't know. Something just like isn't really landing for me. I don't think that it's some giant conspiracy that she was murdered by at the hands of somebody else, but I definitely think that there is a lot of information that leans towards her being driven to do this, and that she was brainwashed, she was controlled, she was manipulated, and that she felt like there was no other escape. So because of that, could there be charges of involuntary manslaughter down the way? I guess we just have to wait and find out. Thank you so much for hearing Micah's story today, guys, and having her voice carry on and continue on. What do you think about this case? Do you think that her husband is more involved in this, or do you think it's cut and dry? What do you make of all of this? Let me know in the comment section or in the review section over on Apple. I will keep you updated. There, I'm sure, will be no shortage of updates in the near future, so I will definitely keep you guys in the loop of all of that information. If you're not following the podcast yet, make sure that you do so that you don't miss those updates. And as a reminder for all my YouTube listeners, I do have the audio-only exclusive podcast episodes every Thursday. There's a chance that those updates may go into those episodes just in case they're time-sensitive and I can't get them over here on YouTube. So even if you're not a huge podcast fan, I would definitely encourage checking that out, making sure you're following it so that you don't miss those updates. All right, guys, thank you again. And until the next one, stay safe, be nice, don't kill people, and I will talk with you very soon. All right, bye.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's,